You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 11 August. We've got local manufacturing production data due 1 p.m. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Nkunza, Sanlam Private Wealth. We've got Absa Standard Bank results out. I think it's Standard Bank later this week, Absa next. What we're looking for, U.S. earnings season as it comes to a close. It's been a good earnings season. If we've got a minute, the Thungela update. Flabella Yates from Equilibrium. Country bias. We typically have far too much exposure to our home market. How to manage that. And then Samika Lazwani from FNB. Retirement. We always talk around people aren't saving enough for retirement. Okay, maybe we need to flip it in the head. And how do we manage that? Because the message that we should save more is not seemingly working. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headline, MoneyWeb. Electricity Minister wants Eskom to drop trading license litigation. And then Business Day, Minister expands a digital first tour operator scheme. New scheme has an additional 25,024 tourists to South Africa from two key markets, India and China. Morning markets, the US was green, S&P 0.8, NASDAQ 1% higher. The East is mixed, we got Sydney up 0.3%, Tokyo is closed for Mountain Day. Hong Kong is also up 0.3%, Tencent down 0.3%. Commodities, red. Gold futures, 3,438. Brent, 66.29. Platinum, 1,325. Palladium, 1,125. Rand, 1,772. Bitcoin, 121,800. Top 40 opening call, green open, just over 200 points, 0.2% higher.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Nick Kunza. You find him, of course, Sanlam Private Wealth. Nick, appreciate the early morning call. Let's kick off with those banking numbers coming through. Standard Bank later this week, Absa next. We saw the Nedbank last week, and it wasn't so much perhaps the results that spooked markets. Maybe it was more the forward commentary. But looking through it, I mean, we've got Absa and Nedbank on price to book of a little under one, Standard Bank 1.4. First Rand always the outlier, a little under two. What are you looking for in these results? Is it going to be once again more about their forward-looking statement, which is probably going to be cautious at best?
Yeah, morning, fellas. Thanks for having me on as always. Yeah, I think first and foremost, two slightly different banks, and it's so to speak. Yes, they are the big sort of retail banks in South Africa, but if you drill down to the numbers a little bit, they tell a little bit of a different story. I mean, first and foremost, Absa, you know, they've had quite a few problems in the C-suite. We all know about them, and that's reflected, I guess, the year-to-date performance. They're down almost 6% year-to-date, where Standard Bank is far better off. It's actually up about 4% year-to-date. So two very different stories. And also, if you look at the earnings quality as well, what we're looking out for certainly is Standard Bank being the outlier in that just over 40%. Of its headline earnings are contributed from the Africa region. So it's quite an unusual entity in the SA banking space, where Absa is obviously a little far more local. And then the third thing to watch out for when they report is return on equity. You know, you mentioned price to book. It's a very good guidance. So is return on equity, how they utilize it. And, Standard Bank demands a bit more of a premium because they get close to 18, 19%. In fact, they've guided to almost 20% ROE as opposed to the likes of Absa, which is a close to 16. So, I mean, that's a very brief summary of what to watch out for those two banks.
Yep, fair shout. And that is that ROE is the biggie with the banks. S&P, we've had it's almost done 90%. I mean, the biggie still, we've got Nvidia still to come, but much of it's done. It hasn't been it's been another good period. I mean, we're probably looking at low double digit growth. That'll be the third quarter in a row. Forward PE 22.1, a little rich, we could argue, but by and large, another good quarter from US earnings results.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, all the sort of naysayers out there, you know, the tariffs, and we all know the problems with the geopolitics, etc. But one thing which keeps ticking along is corporate earnings in the US. And in fact, I saw a headline, I think, sums it up, you know, so far so good with the earnings season in the US. In fact, the S&P 500 is on course now. It's almost finished. We'll wrap it up this week, as you said, one or two biggies left. But that will be one of the largest number of positive surprises relative to the expectations in almost 25 years. The last time we did that, Simon, was during the coronavirus. So yeah, steady as we go, so far so good. They're going to carry an outline. In fact, just a comment, there was a lot of hope about the sort of European earnings season, which is also taking part. And in fact, they're actually a little bit lagged compared to the US. The US continuing to be, American exceptionalism in the corporate space for now anyway.
Yeah, that was exactly the phrase I was going to use. I mean, it's wild, but I mean, to your point, and I mean, 80%+ of companies, positive surprises. Flip side, last question, Thungela Resources, you and I from time to time chat single commodity miners. There's either one of two spaces, you're a gold miner and things are booming, you're not a gold miner and things are tough. And no surprise. I mean, they're expecting HEPS to be down around 80-odd%. I mean, coal prices under pressure. This hurts.
Yeah, I mean, 85% forecast and drop. I mean, that puts it around anywhere between R2.10, R1.40 on HEPS. That's a big drop. Reflecting the share price down over 3% on Friday. I mean, that's also telling a story, 30% down so far today. Yeah, thermal coal prices been under pressure. We all know the story. And also, I mean, they did trying to sort of diversify a little bit. They bought that 15% stake in that Isham coal mine that was in Queensland, Australia, that they didn't really own it. So they are trying to diversify their sort of earnings stream a little bit geographically. But nevertheless, yeah, unfortunately, when you operate in a commodity, you're sort of like that one-trick pony. When those prices are under pressure, I mean, you're going to feel it as well. But I will say this, Simon, it is a well-run business. And, you know, if they get a few things right, you know, I do see that maybe the worst is in the price already.
Yeah, and I take your point. I mean, the commodity price, they've got no control over. What they can control, they're largely doing well. It's just tough out there. Nkunsa, Sanlam Private Wealth, always appreciate the early morning time. The Standard Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation-beating returns. Let your money keep working with Standard Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Fobela Yates, Managing Director at Equilibrium. Fobela, appreciate the time. A recent article you sent out talking around, I suppose, behavioral biases in a sense. You were talking in particular about home country bias. We know our home country. We know the brands and we often overinvest and it's bad for our returns.
Yes, it is. By the way, that isn't a phenomenon that only happens to South African investors. We see this across the globe. Regardless of which market you live in, investors tend to have a bias towards their own home country. And it's for a variety of reasons, but most of them are actually behavioral or belief biases.
It absolutely is. And, you know, one of them you mentioned, for example, was familiarity. I know lots about Woolies and ShopRite as two examples. I kind of know that Tesco's and Walmart's exists, but I've never experienced them, which kind of puts them into a further sort of distance to me.
Absolutely. So because you know the brands that you use, you believe they're going to outperform brands that you don't use. And the problem is, as you correctly say, because you don't know the other brands, you don't know whether they're stronger or weaker. And actually, having diversification in any portfolio comes with a lot of benefits. All research globally shows that.
And it's also, some of it's availability bias. Although, and that would have been a much bigger issue locally a decade or two ago. These days we do have, I mean, I'm trying to think, we probably have as good availability as an investor sitting in any other market.
We do. So particularly if you're in a portfolio that has a global asset manager looking after your assets, they would typically not only look at local stocks, but stocks across the entire universe. And from an availability point of view, there are a lot more vehicles these days. Yeah. The Regulation 28 constraints have been lifted to quite a large extent. When I started my investment career, we could invest 10% outside of South Africa.
That's
now
right.
Almost half our portfolio, 45%, can be outside of South Africa. So we're constantly looking for opportunities in different geographies.
And I liked your point a moment ago where you said it's sort of, you know, we shop at ShopRite, so we think it's the best. I remember, and this goes back a long time, I think we had 4 QSR brands on the entire JSE, yet they had 9 pizza brands in New York. You mentioned diversity. It is just, I mean, it's the old cliche, the world's your oyster and you need to take advantage of it.
We do. And actually, a very good example, even in the current environment, mm-hmm. is if you built a portfolio on a 60-40 basis, so 60% exposure to equities and 40% exposure to fixed income or mm-hmm. bonds like and money market like instruments, and it was all in South Africa, you are really restricted to such a small universe yeah. of just over 200 shares, right? And then our South African bonds and money market instruments. If you did the same, but you expanded it to include other emerging markets outside of South Africa, mm-hmm. as well as developed markets, not only do you get exposure to such a large universe of different shares and different bonds or fixed income assets, you would also get exposure to different industries that you typically won't
yeah.
get here.
Yeah, yeah.
So for example, energy. Mm-hmm. Energy is not an industry that we have a lot of exposure to in South Africa, but lots of other economies do. You know, the tech sector is a lot yeah. more diversified internationally.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. You mentioned that this is not unique to South Africa. I mean, we're obviously talking South Africa, but it's not unique to us. And you did some research on your team in the UK, and you found the bias.
We did, actually. It was very interesting. We have a team in South Africa and mm-hmm. a team in the UK. We one team, but we sit in different jurisdictions. And I thought it would be interesting to compare the range of portfolios we run for mainly UK-based investors mm-hmm. versus the ones we run for mainly South Africa-domiciled investors. And it was so interesting that the offshore portion of the South African portfolios is a lot more aligned to the MSCI weightings. Mm-hmm. And maybe just for people who don't know what that means, it basically means that when you look at the whole world economy, different countries contribute different amounts to world mm-hmm. GDP. Mm-hmm. So we're a lot more equally weighted. We don't tend to go into one specific region, like only going into China or only going into the US. Whereas for our UK investors, mm-hmm. Their offshore portion still tends to have a UK bias in the overall portfolio. Mm-hmm. So they allocate a lot less to the MSCI world. And so what that does is it actually results in very different performance from two different ranges mm-hmm. where the same investment team is looking at the portfolios. And it's just driven by what the investors ask us to put together for them.
Absolutely. And it's a fascinating example. And I suppose to conclude, I mean, we can't, biases are part of a human nature. It's what and who we are. The answer is in recognizing them and then managing them.
Absolutely. So the way that we always say we believe very strongly in the value of financial advice. Mm-hmm. So we always say that if you're not sure what your biases are or how to overcome them, it's probably a good idea to speak to a certified financial advisor mm-hmm. and help them manage these biases, because it's human nature. All of us have biases.
Yeah.
And sometimes we don't even know that we have them. So financial advisors are very good at guiding you through those.
Yeah, and perhaps those are the ones that we don't know we have are the real problems, because, well, we're unaware. We'll leave it there. Flabella Yates, Managing Director, Equilibrium. Appreciate the time.
And that's our poll today. As your portfolio, do we suffer from country bias? I suspect most of us probably not, because we've been, as Flabella said there, we used to have a limit of 10% on offshore. It's now 45. Of course, there's other ways we can do it, and individually we can take pretty much whatever we want. But have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Give you money, smoother returns for StanLib Asset Management. The StanLib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Sami Keleswani, FNB Wealth and Investment. Sam, appreciate the time today. I think it was back in June, you and I chatted about FNB's 2025 Retirement Insight Survey. And it's not new data. It's not unique to South Africa. We talked around the fact that retirement is not going well for many South Africans, or retirement planning. We're not putting much aside. We're not going to have enough when we get to that retirement. A really excellent article from your colleague Sizwe just recently talks around how perhaps we should revisit how we look at retirement and retirement planning.
Absolutely. I think it's very clear that, you know, the way that people are actually picturing retirement and the way that you save for retirement has actually evolved over time. As an example, you know, when you actually go through the survey, you can pick up that only less than 10% of the people are intending on retiring fully. Mm-hmm. So that changes, you know, the way that you think about retirement. And when you actually dig deeper, you can see that people are saying, listen, I'll probably continue working full time or even work part time or probably get, you know, a second career when I get to retirement. And that means, you know, the way that you think about retirement has changed compared, you know, to the past. And there's a couple of reasons that's actually driving the way that people are thinking about retirement. The first one is that, as you mentioned, people have not saved sufficiently for retirement. And mm-hmm. they're actually aware that if they actually take retirement at the mandatory retirement age, their savings will not sustain them throughout their lifetime. Then the second aspect is that people are also aware of the extension of the life expectancy, yeah. which has been happening over the last couple of years. And they know that, you know, whatever they've saved needs to actually last over a long period of time. So if you have not saved sufficiently, people actually know that now I need to supplement at least for the first 10 years that income in retirement so that at least I can have sufficient income when it comes to, you know, my retirement life. And you actually pick up as well when you look at people pre-retirement, when they actually tell you that for me to actually save properly for retirement, I do not have to think about it one-dimensionally. I need to think about it in a number of ways. I need to use the official, you know, instruments that I've actually legislated for me to save towards retirement, such as mm-hmm. IRA pension fund. But they say you need to supplement that with, you know, additional things on the side, maybe a small business to supplement your savings so that you do not disturb, you know, your retirement journey, or even, you know, property and try and get income out of it. So we're picking up that change that people have actually changed the way that they save towards retirement and the way that they picture retirement as well.
It is. It's a fundamental. And I'm thinking, you know, my grandfather, and you know, I'm old enough that my grandfather was retiring a long, long time ago. He literally retired at 65. His life expectancy was probably 5, maybe 10 years. It is now 30. I take your point around, you know, maybe it's a new career, maybe it's a side hustle, but the savings are now having to stretch that 30 year, and it's not going to be enough. And it is those conversations we need to have, and they need to happen, I suppose, as is always the case, sooner rather than later.
Absolutely. And I think the more people are aware of it, the better. That is why there's a lot of education drive when it comes to retirement. But most importantly, is the ability to actually understand how to plan for retirement. Mm. I think that is basically the critical thing here, is how do I then set up a plan for retirement? And the survey is actually clear that people who are in retirement are saying, I could have actually done better with my retirement planning. Yeah. If I'd actually received advice on how to plan for retirement and how to actually set up a resilient retirement strategy, I'll give you an example. People are saying, you know, people do not have liquidity for them to address emergency needs. People are actually in debt, you know, long debt that is actually very expensive. And then people do not have policies that can address life events such as funeral or a life policy. And then those things, if they happen during their retirement journey or during their planning for retirement, they disturb their long-term retirement planning. So it's very, very critical that when they actually start off, you're actually able to actually explain to them where do these solutions fit in as you are actually planning for retirement. So that's why we say people, it's very, very critical for them to have a holistic retirement plan and sit down with a financial advisor or an expert who is going to actually enable you to have a proper understanding of how financial solutions fit in terms of enabling you to have a proper retirement plan.
Absolutely. And it is so much more than just sort of putting the money aside into a pension, a Reg 28, whatever. It's around estate planning. It's around tax. I mean, I was chatting with a retiree recently and they were unaware of the interest exemption that they get every year, which is just, you know, a tax efficient way where they could be paying a little less tax every year. And it was that communication. I think importantly, this is not about
I don't know, destroying dreams around retirement. It's about being realistic and ensuring that those dreams are more realistic and fit within what is actually achievable.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, when you actually spend time to actually understand what you want to actually do when you get to retirement, which you'll be forced to do when you're actually sitting down with your retirement advisor, because the questions are going to be asked. Do you plan on traveling around the world once you get to age 60? So do you plan to actually retire, go and sit in a small countryside and, you know, live out your life there in retirement in a farm? What are your plans exactly? And that will inform the amount of savings that you need to have when you get to retirement. And then now you then work it backwards, whereby you now start planning and say, how do we actually get you to that rent value that will enable you to get that goal? So it's very, very critical for you to have that conversation, so that you can unpack as to what do you really need to do for you to get to retirement. And then, as you mentioned, you know, the right vehicles for you to save for retirement. Yeah. I mean, if you're actually experiencing, if you're getting vehicles that are actually tax efficient, it's very, very critical for you to take advantage of them, because those vehicles will enable you to actually have more retirement savings when you get to retirement. And then from there, which ones do you start with? I mean, you've got a tax-free savings account, you've got a retirement annuity, you've got a pension fund. Where do you start? Which ones do you actually use? I'll give you an example. If you're in a pension fund, you know, you find that it's quite big, such that the economy is scale allowed for the administration cost to be very, very small. So if you actually maximize on those contributions, it's very, very, very good. And then once you've actually topped up, then you move to your retirement annuity, you move to your tax-free savings account. So all those things, all that type of information, you get to unpack with your financial advisor.
Yeah, I like the theme of the article was around sort of reimagining. We're not cancelling, we're not saying it's not going to happen. We just need to perhaps rethink it. So Michaela Zwani, FNB Wealth and Investments, always appreciate the insights.
That's it for today. We're chatting with Tony Ramakosi from 91 on Friday, talking around Transnet and some signs of a turnaround. It's early days. There's a long way to go, but certainly some good signs. We asked you if they could successfully navigate it to becoming a functional SOE. It was equally split, about a third each saying yes, but slowly, no, too far and gone. And then the last bunch saying we live in hope. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Norbuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Swiss banking.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.